WMNF Tampa, on air with your support.
All right, we're back here on the Sunday Forum, and we're about to go into the NPR in just a few minutes. As a matter of fact, in just a minute. And our guest this morning is Dr. Norm Clemmons. Dr. Clemmons, I just got finished talking to all our people out there on Facebook that have a lot of comments right now. And I'm telling everybody on Facebook, call in, 813-239-9663. Don't just make a comment. Call in. Talk to Dr. Clemmons live right here. Ask your question, 813-239-9663. Everybody who's watching has a cell phone. Everybody. Pick up that cell phone, call. We want to hear from you. Get involved in the conversation. That's why we call this the Sunday Forum. That's why Otis Anthony called this the what, Mabili?
The Live Sunday
from
Forum.
From NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. Iraq's prime minister has survived an assassination attempt, escaping unharmed and appearing on TV after his home was targeted. NPR's Ruth Sherlock has the latest.
The Iraqi government says drones laden with explosives tried to hit Prime Minister Mustafa al-Qadhimi's home in Baghdad's heavily fortified green zone. The area also houses embassies belonging to the US and other nations, as well as Iraqi government offices. Officials say the attack involved three drones, two of which were shot down by security officials. The third landed at the Prime Minister's home. Seven of al-Qadhimi's security guards were injured in the attack, Iraqi officials say. The US condemned the attempted assassination and has offered help to find the perpetrators. The attack comes as Iranian-backed militias refused to accept last month's parliamentary elections. Ruth Sherlock, NPR News.
To Scotland now, and the climate summit in Glasgow, it's reached its midpoint and negotiations are stuck on several thorny issues. NPR's Dan Charles is there and he reports that talks will resume when higher level officials from each country arrive this week.
Among the most divisive issues, poorer countries are pushing for much more financial aid to help them cope with climate change and build clean energy systems. Richer countries have not delivered as much aid as they've promised in the past. Some negotiators are pushing for stricter monitoring systems to make sure that countries actually cut greenhouse emissions as sharply as they've pledged to do. Political leaders also will be debating whether they need to come back in 2 years with improved commitments, because the pledges so far are not enough to limit global warming as much as scientists say is needed to prevent enduring damage to human communities and ecosystems. Dan Charles, NPR News, Glasgow.
Last week's pledge at COP26 to drop carbon emissions did not include the four countries that operate about half of the world's coal-fired plants, Australia, India, the U.S., and China, which has been experiencing power cuts for months. BBC's Michael Bristow reports that China's state power grid says it will be a struggle to supply electricity to the country this winter, estimating that problems will continue until next year.
There were power cuts across China earlier this year. The situation eased after the government ordered coal production increase to keep power stations supplied. But the state grid, which supplies more than a billion people, said there was still a tight balance between demand and supply as China enters the peak period for electricity consumption. To emphasise that point, much of the country is currently experiencing unusually cold weather. There's been snow in Beijing 3 weeks earlier than usual, and people will be turning on their heating to keep warm.
China's weather agency issued its first snowstorm alert of the season today. In Beijing, temperatures plunged amid a steady snow. Authorities closed portions of highways, and there have been flight delays and cancellations. You're listening to NPR News. The Labor Department says the Biden administration is fully prepared to defend its vaccine requirement for businesses with 100 or more workers. The department's top legal advisor says it's confident of its legal authority to issue the rule through the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. A federal appeals court has put a temporary hold on the rule that identifies COVID-19 as an occupational hazard. Police in Houston have opened a criminal investigation into the AstroWorld Music Festival. 8 people were killed and dozens more injured when the crowd surged toward the stage Friday night. Police say there are unconfirmed reports of someone injecting other people with drugs. The British vocalist Terence Wilson, the founding member of the British reggae group UB40, has died at the age of 64. Vicky Barker reports from London.
Terence
Lawrence Wilson, better known by his stage name Astro, was part of the original lineup of the multiracial Birmingham-based UB40. The band took its name from the unemployment benefit form of the day. In singles like Red Red Wine and Kingston Town, the group drew on the dub-influenced rhythms of reggae and ska to engage with social and political issues. Wilson said it was easier to write about those themes than pen love lyrics because racism and oppression were what his fellow band members were likelier to experience and witness daily in the 1970s. Wilson died after a short illness. For NPR News, I'm Vicky Barker in London.
And I'm Joel Snyder. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Kauffman Foundation, working together with communities to break down barriers and prepare all people for success in their jobs and careers as employees or entrepreneurs. More online at kauffman.org.
Hi, I'm Tanya Vidovic. Join me and my co-host Grace Benke for our show, Sustainable Living, every Monday morning at 11 here on your community-supported radio station, WMNF Tampa.
On Sustainable Living, we bring you educational conversation with local experts on sustainable topics. So make sure to tune in every Monday at 11 a.m. as we discuss all things sustainable, from alternative energy and gardening, all the way from home births to green burials. You won't find another program like it anywhere other than on WMNF 88.5 FM and WMNF.org.
You are listening to WMNF Radio 88.5 FM, and you're being serenaded by Walter L. Smith, the host of the Sunday Forum, if you're looking at their online rendition.
There's a sound of Switch. There'll never be a greater love right here on WMNF. 88.5 FM. Oh, man. Listen, man. We're serious here, right? We're serious. But we love having fun with you guys because we love you. Because we love you. And like we always say, from our voice to the radio waves to the hearts and the minds of the people, we love you. And there's absolutely nothing you can do about it here on the Sunday Forum. Hey, listen, and it's true. It's true. That's why we're talking about this issue of the opioid crisis. It's something, we have something to talk about. So we're going to wrap up this discussion, really. We're going to bring it in, and we're going to go on to our next topic. Doc, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Hey, listen.
Let me just say this. Okay. if I could finish that one point, because I heard your host there, co-host there, talking, and I'll just say this, is that, you know, oftentimes I'm on, when I do radio, I think some of our hosts try to Willie Lynch each other. We don't listen to each other. But that whole dissertation that you just gave out there, the young man out there, is garbage, and it sits on a foundation of rubbish. And just recently, let me say something, just last week, a court found, and this is California, Judge Wilson, Peter Wilson, just came out and found that these ruled against these so-called folks who have been suing these drug companies, and he found no evidence that pain relievers caused the opioid crisis. And this is a 42-page ruling that took place by Judge Peter Wilson in the Superior Court in California. And the case involved, again, these companies, private companies, and also the state that was suing these drug manufacturers for this sort of part of the opioid crisis. It turns out that whole dissertation that you just presented, it's garbage. It's just complete rubbish. And if you look at the You're Within the Norms from the Cato Institute, the work done by Jeff Singer, and that whole dissertation of where he shoots down movies such as Dreamland and Dropstick and those sort of things as they conclude to a false narrative. And I think, brother, if you would just read these work of what has been done here, that you and many other people have caught up into this false narrative about the companies overproducing and those sort of things. And that's just simply not the case. The problem, the cause of the opioid, if you want to call it that, crisis, has been illicit drugs that are being illicit products that are coming out into this country from the drug cartel. And in terms of when we talked about this work in Afghanistan, for example, where the United States, when they took over in Afghanistan, the Taliban had actually reduced the amount of production of poppy from 200-something thousand hectares to 71,000 hectares. And yet, when the United States took over, that number increased to 328,000 hectares. That comes out of the special Afghanistan Inspector General on Afghan Reinstruction, written by John Sopko. Read that report. We, in fact, got movies in You're Within the Norm, a show where the United States Army was paying, protecting the poppy grow. They were paying poppy growers for the destruction to their plants. The DEA was given $8.3 billion to eradicate the poppies, and then lost it all. And somehow we don't know where that money went and stuff. So then we got this notion, whoa, you know, Norm, wait a minute now, 95% of the poppy growth was turned into heroin, and most of that was going to Europe and in Asia and those sort of places. And that's true. So you mean to tell me that the United States government, Department of Defense, and the Department of State protected the poppy growth of these Afghan warlords and paid them $147 billion to so-called not grow the poppies, but in fact they got richer. In fact, they got so novel at it, they began to use solar panels to produce their pot. We paid these people to produce more and more heroin so it can go to our allies. Now tell me, what do you think France and Britain and those people think about that sort of thing? This is a major scandal which is taking place within the United States government. And you, when you read this work of what we've done and what other people do. I'm talking about, you don't have to pay attention to me, but read Richard Lauer. Read the study that was done by the Cato Institute. Read the work that was done at the University of Florida. There are hundreds and hundreds of articles that are out here that point out that what we have here is a scam that's been taking place on the American public. And there were opioid. I mean, let me ask you this. You seem to know a lot about, sir, about opioid. I mean, opioid. Which opioid are you talking about? Let me ask you. What opioid are you talking about? Are you talking about oxycodone or hydromorphone or methadone? Which a heroin? Which opioid are you addressing here? I'm waiting for your answer on that question.
Well, let's go to the next caller.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yes, sir.
Go ahead, caller. You're on.
Caller, you there? Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I guess they're not there.
You know,
somebody's there.
Somebody's there. Okay, I'll tell you what. While we're waiting for them to come on, very good point. Very good responses. Very good point. Because let me as you were talking, it put me and we'd be foolish not to consider that everything you're saying or to dismiss what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's number one. And the reason I say that it'll be foolish to do that is because it was just 40 years ago that the 40 plus years ago that it was the conspiracy theory, right? Listen to me. Mm-hmm. That it was a conspiracy theory only that drugs were produced and brought into the black community.
No,
I get it. I get it. But listen, hear what I'm saying. Yes, 40 plus years ago, it was just a conspiracy theory. And no one in the black community either, there was a series of people in the black community, no, they wouldn't do that. White people, no, they wouldn't do that. But, and for the purposes of making us docile, right? And to infiltrate our organizations and so forth and destroy us from within. Now, stop. Put a pin in there for a minute. Fast forward, 40 plus years later, in about 2000 or so, you had the meeting in Los Angeles where the former CIA director stood in front of an audience in California, in Los Angeles, and admitted to the fact that, in fact, that was not a conspiracy theory, but it actually did happen, and it was done for that particular purpose. Now, I think my point here is that this is analogous to that point, to that particular thing. Is everybody with me on that? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Mobili?
Let me say this here. That, in fact, you go to Richard Nixon's War on Drugs when he came out in August of, I think it was 1972. And what did Ehrlichman, John Ehrlichman, say in 1999 or 98? And he was reporting to a gentleman at Harper's Magazine that was just released in 2015. And he said that the War on Drugs was, Nixon had two enemies. They were hippies and black people. And so he wanted to arrest all the hippies, okay, which are, you know, white folks who were protesting about the war with marijuana, and they wanted to associate the black community and disrupt the black community by putting heroin into our community. And they said, did we know that the war on drugs was a lie? I've got the actual quote here, if I can just pull it up here. Did we know it was a lie? Yeah, we did. So this whole thing of the war on drugs became a war on us. In other words, this stuff was brought into our community to disrupt the civil rights movement and to disrupt
the black power movement.
The black power and uppity arrogant Negroes like you and I from getting our degrees and our building our infrastructure and improving the economics well-being of our community. And that's well documented. And what did Ehrlichman say? He said, did we know it was a lie? He kept saying, he said, yeah, we did. Yeah, we did. That's the truth behind the war on drugs. What should happen now? And President Biden is worth his salt. He should just issue an executive order saying, we're going to end this war on drugs. All right. And the Drug Enforcement Agency was brought there to enforce this kind of stuff in our community. That was a role that they were playing. And people are thinking, oh, no, they wouldn't do it. Yeah, they did. The DEA and the DOJ, as it speaks now, serve the same role as what J. Edgar Hoover has put under the FBI. It was served under the FBI. And it's not right. It's a fact. Look at all the arrests that are taking place with these doctors. We, you know, you got a better chance of going to prison going to jail now, having an MD degree and a DDS degree and stuff than you do if you didn't go to prison or you didn't go to school at all. They're arresting anesthesiologists, internal medicine. Racking them up day after day. You should read this stuff that's going on. And people are complaining. For example, I'm in contact with some sickle cell patients, okay? Every time they go to get their prescription, they get profiled and stuff. It's horrendous. In fact, that's what the Kincaid out of Cleveland is. We were on, we wrote articles about how the rate of suicide amongst our veterans. It's doggone near 75%. It's risen by 75%. And that's been over the last 2 years. And this stuff is right here. It's right there. This is what Singer talks about. It's the writings of Josh Bloom that describes this, what's going on. People aren't, for example, chronic and when we talk about people's use, chronic intractable disease states, there are diseases in which you have our genetic disorder, or which you have excruciating pain. Sickle cell is one of them. Sarcoidosis is another one. Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. You ever hear of that? That's another one. You know, and so this has all been criminalized by these fake guidelines and these fake these guidelines that have been demonstrated to be. Unscientific, they've been quantified by states. That's the problem.
Well, and I think that's the danger. That is the danger of those people who are in the field of epidemiology, right, and public health. That's a very dangerous thing when you have students who go through epidemiology, and they begin to look at the biostatistics. Of how these things are, you know, how this spreads, how the pain thresholds are, and determining what those pain thresholds are, and the access to medications, that is a real big.
We're talking
issue.
About two different things. Then
it's no. We're talking about guys. We're talking about the same thing. We're talking about the criminalization of. See what's the problem is that there's a big difference between the therapeutic use of a medication. Versus the recreational use of a illicit product. In fact, these medications, these products like fentanyl that come up through this country, those are non-medical substances that are being delivered. They're not the of a pharmaceutical grade, but they're being pumped into this country by the drug cartels. But it is easier to go after the doctors. Because they're easier enforcement targets. One is that the doctors don't fight back. Two, they've got a lot of property. And three, you know, it's a big name when you put a doctor in prison versus going after somebody from the cartel and stuff. So what the Drug Enforcement Agency has done and the DOJ has done is say, hey, we're going to rack up a whole industry of attorneys that are just going to go after these doctors and get up to hire legal them.
Are they black doctors primarily?
Yes. And that's the other thing that comes up. Yes, primarily they're people of, in fact, I guess, of color. Physicians and dentists, and Indian doctors, especially those. Look, let me tell you a statistic we came across. And this was done by a doctor named Joshi, okay? Indian doctors are primarily 6%, about 5% of the population in terms of physicians. Black doctors are like about 4%. Indian doctors represent 16% of the prosecutions that are taking place now. And black doctors represent 20%. And we're only 4% of the physician population. So what's happening? You got 36% of the doctors that are licensed that are being prosecuted today are people of color. And it's just amazing what we're seeing and stuff. And you just think about what's happening here, because we are easier enforcement targets. Period. It's the same thing that exists in what we call, and we describe it as regulatory racism and predatory policing. And this takes place at a level. So you don't hear about this stuff, you know, because you know it takes place at a different level, but it amounts to the same thing. And when you read You're Within the Norms, but read the research. So when I'm talking about when we're writing, we're not talking about, it's not me just up here running my mouth here trying to get. No, it's based on research done and according to reported that the findings show. And it demonstrates that we've talked to people all over the country here that have talked about it. We had a pain mark, and these are both black folk, white folk, like I said, Indian.
All right.
We all got together and we put these articles together and stuff. And so how are these people all saying the same thing? All these medical professionals, because we've been able to demonstrate that, and right, we are fighting back. This is a group that's fighting back.
So Doc, so Mabili, let's hear what you want to say, and then let's go to the phone call. Okay. We have a phone call here.
No, I just he asked, what drugs are we talking about? And then he started talking about heroin and, you know, in Nixon, in the last war on drugs. And I'm saying, what do we do about these big pharmacies, these big pharmaceuticals who have overprescribed? I mean, he says what I had mentioned earlier was a bunch of bull, and I don't think so. I mean, we talking about $31 billion that were made since the mid-90s on OxyContin. So I'm talking about drugs like that. OxyContin, and they made they only got fined $630 million. Purdue only got fined $630 million when they made $31 billion in sales in OxyContin. And we talking about fentanyl. We talking about all types of other types of drugs that have been thrown into these, you know, that had to be cracked down on. We talk about oxycodone, 39 times increase. Fentanyl, 25 time increase. I mean, and all you need is a grain to kill you, you know. So do these doctors, just because they're doctors of color, do they care about the deaths that this overprescription and would do in the community? And do people who are actually at pharmaceuticals, if the doctors are getting arrested, why aren't these people at pharmaceuticals getting arrested, and why aren't they getting just a slap on the wrist with these small-time fines, just so that the government can say that they've done something? And even though they are, it sounds like you don't want the government to even go after those people. So yeah, I just think that we have to be cognizant about what drugs we're talking about.
Can I say something here, Duncan? Dang, you Willie Lynching me again.
Right? Willie Lynch is a hoax.
Right. Willie Lynch
is a hoax.
You seem to know a lot about that. I let you talk, so let me talk.
Okay? Please.
The fentanyl that you're talking about that's coming out of here is illicit. This is not the stuff that physicians are prescribing. And first of all, and then the second thing, let's talk about oxycodone and those sort of things. Oxycodone is a very effective medication for the treatment of pain and chronic pain. And when we talk about overprescribing, There's no, what do you mean by overprescribed?
Quota increases. Based they need
what?
Quotas.
Based on what? Wait, hold on a minute, Doc. I let you talk.
You asked the question.
Prescribing is based upon the disease state of the patient. When the doctors come in there and look at a patient and stuff, it is based upon the disease state and the treatment of that particular patient. Each one is an individual that comes in. So what do you mean by, how do you define overprescribing? Because the federal government doesn't define overprescribing. So I said, again, you seem to know a lot about this stuff here. Tell me, what are you talking about in overprescribing? Based on what? And when you also look at another thing, too, that they don't do. When these patients, where I said, these doctors are overprescribing, let me ask you this question. These investigators, they never look at these patients. They never look at any patient radiographs or examine any patients. Or do they ever come in and they decide to take their own radiographs, determine that this is, quote, overprescribing?
Well, let me ask a question. Because
based on what?
The Controlled Substance Act, CSA, sets drug production limits.
But the drug production limits are set by the DEA itself. So how can a company be...
They are enforcers of the Controlled Substance Act.
Excuse me, sir.
Calm down, man. We're just having a conversation.
Take it easy. Listen, remember now, we're the forum. There's nothing personal. We're just trying to figure this out, just like everybody else. And most of the questions that are asked are not questions that are against anything, but more trying to flesh out
the
understanding. For instance, you don't hear me doing this because I'm a scientist like you are. So I understand the issue of molarity, and so forth with regards to how much. How the titrations and things that go into the creation of medications, right? So, when we talk about production and what's brought into the country, right? You brought up it, and this is a very good point. Did you hear the part about the grade of stuff that's brought in? Did you hear about that? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very important. That's a very important point because the grade of stuff that's brought in and it's documented is different from the stuff that they get in the pharmacies. You get what I'm saying? That the pharmacy puts out. They get some of it in order to be able to create a certain amount of pills. But you only can do a certain amount. What he's saying, what he reported last time on the show, was the fact that our doctors and pharmacists are getting crucified, right? For prescribing pills, a certain number of pills that are way below the number of pills that have been prescribed by the big boy pharmacists that you were making reference to, right? When you're talking about Walgreens and people like that, right?
Yeah.
They were going, when they couldn't prosecute Walgreens and Walmart and stuff, and it was Walmart really that they went after, they began to go after the black pharmacists. And they weren't even doing a million. They weren't even doing a million pills. The Walmart and those were doing like way over a million pills. These guys right here, in terms of our doctors and stuff, our doctors were only doing like 130,000 maybe.
Well, we have to flesh that out.
But let me just say something about that because there's a lot of things that are taking place here. First of all. You know the part that we're talking about in terms of targeting and those sort of things. These guys begin because these smaller pharmacies aren't. First of all, they're not prescribing; they're filling prescriptions from physicians. All right, that's the one thing we need. Walgreens and Pronto Pharmacy, they don't prescribe anything. They just simply respond to a doctor's prescription and stuff. So when you look at what the DEA is saying, that the pharmacist should then turn around and question the patient for for the type of medication controls medication, particularly control medications that they're getting. What has happened is that what you have is a profile. All right. You've got people saying, based on you're getting too much based on this 90 MME standard and stuff. The fact, the guideline that they're using is simply flawed. It's fraud. The CDC guideline is unscientific. But the pharmacies and the DEA are operating under this fictitious guy. The CDC, first of all, has no business in setting any guidelines in the control of Medicaid. That's the job of the FDA. The CDC is totally doesn't have a mandate on it. So the CDC has been reckless. And we were at a meeting the day, and this is the sad part of it. We were at a conference that I participated in with CDC in terms of these renewing these guidelines. This was July 16th. And when you heard these guys from the CDC dressed in United States Public Health Service uniform, you began to ask yourself, boy, I've never seen such incompetence in my life. All right? These are the same people, these United States Public Health Service folks that developed the Tuskegee studies, okay, that turned around and have developed these so-called fictitious guidelines. Even they have admitted that they were wrong. And people who are being harmed by this sort of thing that's taking place here. And it's well understood that what they have done was simply wrong. And they've even said wrong. But yet, agencies like the Drug Enforcement Agency and the DOJ have pushed this sort of kind of thing. And the state agencies, state attorney generals, and even the federal courts have pushed this sort of kind of nonsense.
That is a problem, Doc. I recognize it as a problem because I know, and you know, and Mabili knows that the CDC is only supposed to address those issues with regard to disease and disease control, right? They are not pharmacists. They are not in terms of as an organization. They don't deal with the issue of pharmacy and medication. You're right. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, is supposed to deal with that particular issue.
Well, the FDA does regulate the safety and efficacy of drugs.
I agree. That's exactly what I'm saying. Right. So we're not saying anything differently.
Well, but they did allow people like Purdue, to approve OxyContin labeling, promoting use around the clock. The FDA did that. They allowed Purdue Pharma to do that. To sell in OxyContin, approve OxyContin, and label it, promoting the use of it around the clock.
Well, so that basically justifies what's being said.
Well, maybe so,
because what we're saying now.
The crackdown came later, and it seems like that the pharmaceuticals got off with a slap on the wrist while the doctors, and again, we're not disagreeing, the doctors did take the hit. Right. They did take the hit, but some of those doctors should have known better. Right. And to prescribe what they were prescribing.
I don't disagree with that at all. And I don't think Dr. Clemens does either. I think that the reality of it is, and we've got to wrap it up so we can go on to our next topic. We're going to do this again. I enjoyed this conversation because we need to take a deeper dive into this. And, we got to take these two calls, Doc. We're going to take these two calls
Send me some calls.
Let's do it. Let's do it. But we got to keep it limited, okay? Let's keep it limited.
All right. Go ahead, caller.
Let's go.
Yes, sir.
Caller, are you there? What do you have to say?
Beat me up.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Walter. How y'all doing? Doctor, I would say.
Are you on the speakerphone?
It sounds like it. You're far away.
I hear.
Oh, let me say this because I know.
I can just barely hear you. You sound like you're in a hole.
Who, me?
Yeah, you sound like really far away from the microphone or something.
Try it again.
How do I sound?
That's
now?
Better.
Much better.
What's up, man?
Okay. All right. Yeah, let me say this. I hope the doctor, they didn't mean to make you upset, and I don't mean to be a spokesman for them.
Hold on.
A lot of the terms and stuff that you're throwing around out here, it's like Greek to the average person out here. I think the show is very informative, but as far as like addiction, what Mabili was bringing up, I can kind of identify with that. OxyContin. There was a famous conservative talk show host for a long time who became addicted to that substance when he really didn't need it after a while, and he was getting it under the table, the OxyContin. And what you talked about, Purdue, why were they given a slap on the wrist for what they were doing? But doctors who can overprescribe it, you can get addicted to that stuff, they're being thrown in jail, if that's the gist of what I'm getting out of what you guys were last talking about. Yeah, and okay, I don't know. I'm kind of like.
I know it's somewhat kind of confusing, but addiction. Let me say, like your talk show host, addiction is a disease state and can be treated. We have criminalized addiction. Even the talk show hosts who became dependent or so-called addicted on these medications needed treatment. And so, anytime. So the question is. When a person becomes addicted to any medication, whether it's the heroin, most of the addictions taking place are the illicit substances that are out here,
right.
Rather than the prescription medication. Prescription medications are the addiction rate on those are like about 1.1% of the folks who take these type of medication. What you're talking about is abuse. Now, abuse, again, is a condition. In other words, what we've done is we've criminalized even when you see a person who's addicted to heroin walking down the street, that person needs treatment. We've criminalized it. And the question is, when is law enforcement, since when do they treat an addictive disorder? That is something that needs to be. We need to change our whole focus and our whole relationship to how we do things. And addiction is something that will be there for a lifetime. I mean, for example, the same guy who tells you he's addicted on drugs is the same police officer to go into a bar and get a beer, or the same prosecutor go in and drink some Cutty Sark, and get high off of alcohol, which is addictive, or smoke a cigarette, which is addictive. But you go to jail for the drug medication, for the illicit product and the drug medication, but you don't do that for when you're dependent upon alcohol or get high off of a martini or something like that. And I'm saying that it is the same system, the same mesolimbic system in response as it is the chocolate, as it is the drug medication, as it is anything that is habit that you do repetitively and you like and enjoy, it's controlled by the same system, release of dopamine from what we call the DTA of the brain. Same thing. It's the same. All it starts. So these are conditions that need to be treated. We don't need to be handcuffing and folks and throwing them in the prison and stuff like that. These people need treatment, and that treatment let's tell the truth on it. Some of these things you're never going to get off.
Good luck getting people into treatment.
Yeah. Because of the pain. I mean, like sickle cell pain.
Sugar. You try to get off of sugar. You ever try to get off?
That's rough, yeah. Man. That's rough.
What about ice cream?
Yeah, forget it, man.
You get ice cream yogurt.
But like, but when we start talking about the issue of sickle cell medications, the medication for pain for sickle cell. You're going to get that pain. You're going to need the medication for the rest of your life with regard to how curbing that pain. Now, or at least I would assume that would be the case because it's a lifelong disease.
Right. So when you go to there, you got your prescription. And remember, the opioid treatment is a necessary portion of treating sickle cell. You have to be aggressive. And you go in there, Mr. Walter, and you go to get your prescription. The pharmacist looks at you and says, I feel uncomfortable filling your prescription. Yeah. It happens all. It's profiling.
We have a caller that's been waiting for 15 minutes.
Let's get to that call. Let's go.
Go ahead, caller.
Yes, sir.
Hey.
Well, they form.
Y'all are doing a great service for the community. I want to congratulate you. And I recall a different angle back when Reagan was president, and we were fighting the war against the Sandinistas from out of El Salvador, and that fella Ollie North was down there, and they were taking guns down there and trading them for cocaine,
exactly,
and then they had. Found this famous, I don't remember his name, but there was a famous black drug dealer in Los Angeles. and they were turning the
freeway
over to
Rick
him.
Ross.
Yeah.
Freeway. Yeah, exactly. Rick Ross. That's right.
And he and they kind of invented crack because it was a more effective way to get people addicted cheaper and faster than powdered cocaine.
So that was by a chemist. Taught him all that.
Yeah,
that was a terrible thing. That's how the whole crack addiction thing.
And look what it did to our community. It decimated our community. But again, this is remember now the people who did this, and participated with the Colombian cartels and stuff. Nothing happened to them. But tell me this, all right? We've seen this before in history. If we go to You're Within the Norms, read the article we wrote on the rape of China and the opium wars. Okay, let me tell you something. Some of the richest people here in the United States were the biggest opium drug dealers. You ever heard of the Delanos? Those are the Roosevelt family. How do you think he got rich? Through selling through the China trade. How do you think Harvard became Harvard and Yale became that whole educational system? Lowell, Massachusetts was built upon this opium that was imposed upon the Chinese. So when a guy like Pablo Escobar and El Chapo come around, they're saying, well, why are we in prison and being in prison when your greatest leaders have done this sort of thing? And more importantly, that they worked with the CIA.
But aren't we repeating history?
Yes.
Aren't we repeating history when we let the Sackler family off? The Sackler family gets a slap on the wrist. Nobody can sue them. Nobody can overturn the regulatory regime that they tried to avoid. And we end up with this problem.
That you keep reminiscing the Sackler. The Sackler family is not the problem here. And first of all, there's a lot of misconception here about the Sackler family. First of all, you hear them saying, well, the Sackler families were heavily involved in the development of these dangerous benzodiazepines like Valium and Livrium. You know, let me tell you something. You know, first of all, when I came out of pharmacy school, Valium and Livrium were medications that were they weren't over the counter, but you had to get a prescription. They weren't controlled and stuff. So let's get that straight. Most importantly, the Sackler family played a very important role in providing a product in terms of the benzodiazepines, which helped a heck of a lot. A lot of people wouldn't be around here today because before that, when you treat anxiety disorders and those sort of things, you had to use electric shock treatment. So the Sackler family were folks who were physicians. They had a product that people needed, and they marketed and he sold it. Now in terms of and sold it and it worked. The same thing with what they did with oxygen.
They did more than market it, dude.
Hold on.
Yeah. Can I put in one more comment and then I'll let y'all go.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And you know the British are at the root of this too. The British globalized the slave trade and their colonies. And when they had an excess of opium in India, they're the ones that took it over to China because they had too much of it. They're the ones that took the opium over to China. And then somebody mentioned the opium wars because the Chinese didn't want it.
Yeah.
But the British forced it on them.
Well, they didn't want it in big numbers. They noticed that the Chinese would order some opium in their regular orders. And then the British decided they would start forcing it upon them in larger numbers, in larger amounts. Which is with the Sackler. I hate to keep mentioning it, but that's at the root of it. Call, are you done?
Yeah.
I let y'all go.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your call. Let's go to our next caller, and then we're going to have to wrap it up.
I think that's it.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're gone.
Okay. Let me point this out.
Yes, sir.
That's Chris.
Okay. Somebody's calling.
All right. Okay, Chris. If it's Chris, you got 30 seconds, man, because we got to wrap it up, brother. We got to wrap it up.
Go ahead. Call him.
Caller?
Hello.
Yes,
Chris, please.
Whoa.
How you doing, Chris?
No, that's not Chris. Is that Joe?
Joe Rob.
Hey, Joe, what's up,
Joe? How you doing, Joe Rob? How you doing? How you doing, Joe?
Time to show because what's happening is this. There's a lot of fake OxyContin, fake drugs.
Exactly.
Phoenix is the capital because the DEA, they got a storage room out there in San Diego City where they got thousands and thousands and thousands of millions of dollars of pills, but the pills are fake. But guess what's in them? Fentanyl. And so what's happening is the Chinese is putting fentanyl in America making money, and they think it's the, you know, the people try to say it's the pharmacists, but it ain't the pharmacists. It's the illegal pills that's got fentanyl in them, and they ain't got none of it. It looked like OxyContin, but they got fentanyl in them. Everybody does fentanyl, man.
But how did the Chinese get it here, and who distributes it?
Exactly. So let me can I see something
Phoenix,
about that?
Phoenix is the capital.
Let me
I just want to throw that out there and let somebody else call in. But it's the illegal ones that fake, that's fentanyl in, not the ones really coming from the pharmacists. All right?
Yeah.
Right. All right, bro.
Hey, can I say something here about that? Okay.
Very quickly.
Now we get into a geopolitical problem, okay? You think about this, okay? There's folks that it's coming from China, this fentanyl stuff. You think about this. And of the mindset of how some folks may think. You know, the British Empire, the Chinese Empire was an empire of 10,000 years. And the British and the Americans and the Dutch were able to bring it down using this opium, okay? Now, you think about China today. You know, they've got their folks, they've mastered capitalism and stuff. So why should they give a hoot about the production of fentanyl going to this country? In fact, don't you think that somebody's saying, oh, if you can bring down an empire of 10,000 years with opium, can you bring an empire down to 275 years using fentanyl? I mean, dude, you got to look at this as a geopolitical, this is a geopolitical problem. Because, you know, these guys are saying, you know, why should we give a hoot about what's happening in America? You know, and look what America and the British did to us. So now they're complaining about our problem with fentanyl. Well, we'll just produce a little more like what you did to us. Think about it.
Right.
Think about that. I'm saying that this is about the mindset of how geopolitical problems
work. This is why we have regulatory. This is why we have our regulations.
Yes, sir. I mean, that's beyond it, because remember, let's say a lot of this thing, when you think about how the crack cocaine or the crack cocaine got in our case, we just didn't go down to these countries and bring this stuff. This was brought up by governments to sponsor this kind of stuff that went on into our neighborhood. So, you know, we will agree upon that one. That was something that, you know, when a guy was retired and wanted to fly for Delta Airlines and he had a plane and he could get his private plane and fly up there and get to make some money, yeah.
Okay, we have another caller on the line. Go ahead, sure. Caller.
Yeah, it's Ron, baby. What's up?
Y'all, hey,
how you doing, Ron?
Ron, what's up, man?
Excellent job. Hey, y'all got it. Y'all on top of it. I like the diversity and the camaraderie. But listen, the last caller before Joe is what I was going to call about. Because they got snowfall, showed you what they did to our community. I mean, man, that's an excellent series on how that happened, how it destroyed the community. And just lo and behold, the director is dead.
And it was designed to do that.
Let me finish what and I'm going to leave y'all with this.
Yes, sir.
That thing is ongoing. Oliver North, the head of guns, and he brought them guns into our community, and they flooded. They've been flooding the drugs in there. They've been flooding the dumb black people who fight against their own kind for some stuff they're not going to profit off. You just look good till they get you. You can't get the Nicky Barnes them and all that, because history just repeats itself. So my problem is this here. Everybody know what's going on. What's the problem? You know, they need all this instead of create a war on us. We in the middle, like you said, the British got their money, China getting their money, and America said, nah, we got to recoup, so they're using us, man.
And don't forget the Sacklers got theirs.
Well, you love them Sacklers. You're into them Sacklers now. We cannot ignore
this. Somebody's going to knock on their door today, boy.
Haiti, man.
What?
We can't ignore what's happening in Haiti. Wow, that's being used as a transport facility for the for the Colombian market and those sort of things. There's a very interesting article that we wrote about how the ship was being tracked by the DEA and how it got lost, and they paid these Haitian guys there, and the United States consul came down on the DEA and said, hey, you know, wait a minute, what happened to all this ship? You had a couple of tons of heroin and cocaine on the ship, and all of a sudden it's gone.
So all of a sudden, the Bermuda Triangle just starts popping up, right? All of a sudden, the Bermuda Triangle situation starts up.
Yeah. So there's a lot of mischief. There's a lot of mischief taking place here. And I know my guy's going to talk about that Sackler family.
Ron got the last word. Ron, what you say?
Ron, what you got to say, man?
Them Colombians, when I got out of the military in 1980, I was there on 34th Street. Colombians came over there like they owned 34th Street. Dropped them drugs. I looked at like, how the hell I just got the military? And they over here doing this. People started that killing. And they disappeared. Lo and behold, it went back home rich and all that, dog.
And here's the good part about this show, okay? You know, we're supposed, you know, we're supposed to disagree on things. You know, we ain't nobody going to agree on anything. But at the end, we'll always come together and say, let's all have a happy day and let's all be safe.
Yeah, of course.
You know, we'll always dog each other out as a man, you know, so and so and so. But the fact is that the information. I want people to read youarewithinthenorms.com. Doc, I want you to read this. I'm going to help better educate you so that you will not think about them Sackler family. In fact, you want to talk about the Sacklers, talk about the Roosevelts, brother. Let's talk about the Forbes. You know, let's talk about the Careys, who made billions of dollars.
Oh, you mean from Heinz?
Off of the opium trade in China. They're still making, that's old money here. So we want to talk about, if you want to put it in that context and stuff, because there's a lot of mischief that is going around here in terms of our policy in this country and policies throughout the world that enter in that whole dynamics of the illicit trade and the precursors. We even talked about the precursors, you know, how, you know, the acetylene or the other sodium citrates that are used in terms of reagents that are used in terms of getting these products, purifying these products, or getting into a certain state. We haven't talked about that, about the chemical industry that is equally, or the shipping industry that is involved. So this is a lot larger than what we think. But brother, I do need you to read youarewithinthenorms.com. And let's get that article we wrote just today on Billasina Ganesh and Gregory Belcher, a husband and wife team, one guy's an orthopedic surgeon. He's an alpha male. He's married to a woman who's of Indian origin, and both of them are going to prison. And she's going to prison this way. She stood up in front of the Capitol building fighting for this injustice. And you see this injustice that's taking place there. Read the work of Walter Rand. I'm surprised Walter hasn't called in and stuff that talks about this, or the work of Jay Joshi, for example, of Daily Remedy magazine, who's done a lot of work on this. And look at these authors that you see that are in your world. You'll see that this is based upon a foundation of science, a foundation of knowledge, and not a foundation of innuendo, brother. And that's what I'm trying to get you to do. This false narrative you request. Read You're Within the Norms, my brother. And then maybe you'll come back next week and say, you don't know him? Oh, man, you were so right. You've been an expert at this stuff right now. You know, but get away from that Sackler family narrative, brother. Okay.
Never.
Never. Hey, listen, man. We want to thank you very much,
okay.
Dr. Norman Clement. Thank you for joining us here.
Yeah.
Please, folks, go check out You Are Within the Norms. Read, research youarewithinthenorms.com. Check it out on the Facebook page. And we want to thank everybody who joined us today on the Sunday Forum Facebook page, and on radio, and on the computer. We want to thank you very much for joining us, folks. Chris Steiner, sorry we couldn't get to you, man. But we'll talk to you next time. Please post what you have on the Sunday Forum Facebook page. We want to hear from you ASAP. All right. And we are going out, folks, to the sounds of the Doobie Brothers. What a Fool Believes. All right. And we are going out, folks, to the sounds of the Doobie Brothers. What a Fool Believes.
WMNF Tampa.
As always, from our voice to the radio waves to the hearts and the minds of the people, we love you. And there's absolutely nothing you can do about it here on the Sunday Forum. Check us out. Go to the Walter L. Smith II page and check out the event page and call in and check out the Toxic Bus Tour next Saturday, November 13th, 9 a.m. You know, find out more about the impacts, environmental impacts to the black and brown communities. It's very, very important, folks, that we do that and learn more about what's impacting us economically and environmentally. Very important. All right. We'll see you next weekend here on the Sunday Forum. Peace.